And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And those who have come so far on their journey to equality have a responsibility to reach back and help others join them. Because for all our differences, we are one people.
You are listening to Context, where the past meets the present.
Democratic Republican, he won the election.
And here we go. This is live. We are broadcasting for the first time in a couple months. But
wow.
Yes, but we're glad to be back here. This is Context, and I am Mr. Beat, also known as Matt Beat, for those who aren't in my classroom on a daily basis or on my YouTube channel. And I'm joined by
Robert, as always.
Who's a little sick, but he's here. We're doing it.
Been staying alive for the past 2 weeks. It will not go away.
You have a nice deep voice now. It's like, it's more masculine. Yeah. Like,
it's usually squeaky.
You finally went through puberty. Congratulations.
Finally, yeah. It's not as painful as the first time I went through it.
Yeah, I still get acne, so it's great.
Oh,
anyway,
yeah, I do too. It's the stress of the job.
Well, yeah. See, it's contagious. You teach teenagers, you catch
you
that.
You get
too.
It. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we're both teachers. We teach history, middle school and high school. And, well, I just teach high school. But and then we have YouTube channels. And we're looking at this election. And we kind of have maybe a different perspective than most people because we're teachers, I think. And so I think we're going to devote this whole episode to the current presidential election compared to past presidential elections, with a special emphasis on third parties and the role of third parties and how they shape opinions and how important they are for democracy and for movements. And we'll be joined later by a special guest, a guest who has never been on the show. His name is Jeff, and he's from No More Two-Party System. That's the name of his YouTube channel and his Facebook and Twitter and all that. That's his movement he's trying to start. He's trying to start a movement, actually. He is an activist that has his own opinions, and we're not going to necessarily endorse everything he says. But we wanted to have him on the show because he offers a new perspective in terms of the role of third parties and kind of the I think most people will agree with a lot of his criticisms about the current two-party system that we have in this country, and it would be nice to see some reforms in our lifetime, and we can look at reforms in the past, kind of what has been tried in the past to solve this crisis of binary choices, just two choices when you go to the ballot box to vote for president, and most local elections, for that matter. So, yeah. Before we get into this, a reminder, if you want to contact us, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can comment on this video right now if you're watching it on YouTube right now, or you watch it later when it's not live on my Mr. Beat Social Studies channel YouTube page. You can comment on there, and we respond pretty quickly there. Or you can email us more discreetly at contextpodcast@gmail.com. contextpodcast@gmail.com. It's been a while since I said that. It's been way too long, Robert. I'm sorry.
It has been way too. I forgot we had a show there for a while. I mean, it was about 3 or 4 days ago. I was like, I've got to contact Matt and say, hey, when are we going to do this again?
I'm sorry. I'm just too busy. But I'm hoping once grad school dies down, I'll have more free time. And that won't be until May, but in the meantime...
Two hours a month is a lot of time.
It is when you...
Of course, that editing for the audio and posting and filling in.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better.
Substance in the description. Yeah. It's not as easy as making a video. It's not as easy as doing a recording. And
yeah.
I mean, we as YouTubers know that.
Well, I've been doing that... presidential elections in American history. That series, I've been doing that for 2 years almost, and I've been trying to get that dang thing done, and I think I'm going to be able to do it. I'm currently working on the 1992 election, and so that's been taking up all my free time that I possibly have. And so that's the main reason why this podcast has been pushed to the back burner, is because I've been working on that if I do have free time. Because of that I can add a lot to the discussion tonight, because I do feel like almost an expert when it comes to presidential elections because of doing that series. My first question for you, before we kind of delve in, is what challenges have you had trying to teach government and American history with this election cycle? Like, has there been any unusual circumstances that have constantly crept up when you're trying to teach this stuff based on what's going on?
Nothing really. I mean, they are interested in it. It's all pretty much one-sided, though. Where I'm at, it's like the other day I did an assignment. A bunch of kids were gone for extracurricular activities. And I was like, well, we got to do something. So I was just like, make campaign posters. And it was every single one of them was Make America Great Again and Trump 2016. And I'd say that's it. There's just no voice on the other side at all. It's pretty much a fervor where I am.
And just a reminder to the viewers, you're in Oklahoma. And
Southwestern Oklahoma.
Yeah, I should say rural Oklahoma. That's a big difference from, say, Oklahoma City or Tulsa or something. Or even Stillwater, for that matter. I have had more mixed
But even the demographics that they say they aren't supposed to support Trump, they do.
Oh, you're talking about Hispanic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that's always forgotten, is that, you know, there are a lot of minorities that do support Trump. I mean, painting with a broad brush is kind of silly. I mean,
oh yeah, but you know, that's the liberal entitlement. You know, they can do that, but the conservatives cannot, because it's racist if they do it.
Well, what I've noticed about this election cycle with my students is I don't think they like to bring it up. Like, I really don't like. There's a few, of course, that do, but most of the time they're just joking around. I feel like they're about as sick of this election as we are, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have two choices.
Even last night, we wanted to do this podcast last night, but then I was like, I'm obligated to watch it because I know it will come up.
Yeah, the debate. That's the first debate I actually watched all the way through, because I try to avoid the debates because they're not really debates. They're more like an episode of Jerry Springer, as I joke around, kind of half jokingly. I mean, it's really kind of reached a low point. I've been doing a lot of research on past debates, you know, and I was watching an old debate between Adlai Stevenson, and he was debating Estes Kefauver. They were both running in the 50s for the Democratic nomination. Of course, Adlai Stevenson got the nomination, but I was listening to the debate and I was just like, it was one of the first televised debates ever for a presidential election. And it was just so like intellectual. It was so refreshing to see they were talking not only about issues, but they were critically thinking and they were actually listening actively to each other. They weren't just waiting for their turn to speak or waiting for their turn to reply.
And I know little sound bites fed to them.
Yeah. I mean, I know
it's even the reporters, obvious, you know, the debate moderators obviously have their little, you know, planted lines. And, oh, here's where we're going to get him. Here's what we're going to bring up. You know, just waiting for it.
Yeah. Yep. They're all guilty of that. I think it was nice because it was more organic. And I know it seems like I'm being nostalgic here. Like, oh, yeah, things are always better in the good old days. But I do think this is one area where it actually was, in terms of even up to the, if you look back at the 2004 debate between John Kerry and George W. Bush, I mean, it's night and day compared to what we saw last night. I mean, last night was just, I cringed when I was watching it. I was like, oh, I mean, the most popular.
It's a reflection of how dirty the politics is.
Yeah, I think a lot of the dirtiness started with I was researching the election of 1988 campaign, and you saw a lot of dirtiness going on there for the first time in terms of widespread media by the Bush side, Bush Senior, H.W. Bush, when he was attacking Dukakis. But that's where you started to see a kind of. But I mean, you know, we've talked about
Bush
this before.
Brought it in, but yeah, 1824, 1828. I mean, those were the ugliest ever.
But the difference, though, the difference back then, like the election of 1800, is a great example. The difference was it wasn't actually Jefferson and Adams that were saying these things to each other. It was their supporters. Their supporters were the ones who were just going crazy, you know. But they were more dignified. They were more cordial and respectful when they, for the most part,
well,
though, they didn't interact.
I mean, a lot of it's just the internet now. It's here. You can see it. You know, there is no, you know, the people had their voice. And as you said, they were ugly about it. But they're literally, it wasn't a world back then where, I guess it could be a letter or a diary or something. You know, like, oh, this is something he said 11 years ago. I mean, it's just crazy to think that the Bush family had this recording of him and they sat on it for 11 years just waiting for an opportunity to use it for blackmail or whatever. And then, you know, and they didn't bring it out during the primaries.
Oh, you're talking about the...
The Trump clip. I don't even know how we could navigate those waters and... But everyone knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, let's take a step back here because what you're referring to, and we are G-rated for, so we'll,
at least PG-13. PG-13.
Friday, I believe, is when it was dropped. The obviously they were waiting, but you said the Bush family. Like this is a clip of.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he was talking to one of
Billy
the Bushes,
Billy Bush.
Billy Bush. It's his. Okay. Cousin of one and the nephew of the other or something like that.
See, I didn't know they were related.
Bring it out when he was just crucifying Jeb. And I guess it's because they thought, well, Jeb doesn't stand a chance, but someone else will take him out. You know, they didn't think the American public was actually going to pick Trump. But, I mean, we've been through this before. I mean, Trump's success is because everyone is just so sick of the establishment. You know, and
so,
we're talking about a two-party system, but it's kind of been less this one crony. You know, it's the same donors buying all the politicians.
Right.
The Bushes and
Clintons. Let me process this. Billy Bush, I didn't know that was related to the Bushes. I had no idea. So, but I better tell the, in case you've even living in a cave, I mean, this recording, it was even shocking for me because it shouldn't have been, but like to hear, like, it was vulgar language by Trump.
Yeah.
He's been known for vulgar language, but I mean, this was kind of a new level, I guess, in terms of it, you know, him advancing on a woman and saying.
Well, I mean, he said he did, he didn't. Do it, you know. I can remember being in junior high and high school and hearing some pretty vulgar stuff. But the thing that shocked me is he would have been 59 when he was having that conversation.
Yeah.
59.
Oh, it was a young, immature man back
then. I mean,
even
me at 25, you know, obviously I've censored myself constantly because of our profession, you know, from day one. But I can't imagine someone who's 40 talking like that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's like that dirty grandpa thing, you know? It's like, locker room talk, even, I don't even know if I've heard that in the locker room, honestly. He says, but yeah, we all agree it's a bad thing. The thing is, though, you're right. They waited. They waited till October.
Yeah, they waited till after a big WikiLeaks dump, and then they're like, oh, well, this is pretty bad. Let's.
Now, the WikiLeaks dump, I was reading some of it, and I couldn't find anything that was too damaging, but obviously they released a lot of.
There's just so much of it.
Yeah,
I mean,
like,
no human being can possibly go through with all that.
the bottom line is we have two presidential, major party presidential candidates that have huge scandals, like, or not necessarily scandals for Trump's side. He's just basically
right, he can't.
He's a,
but I mean, I think that's, you know, part of his appeal is just the rawness of it, the uncensored. I don't know if machismo is the right word, but he's like an old fashioned all American
fascist.
You know, man. Yeah, just he's,
people want that. They do. We talked about that before.
I mean,
they
it
like
can
that.
Be
fascism.
Like it might be some of what the country needs, you know, is the big, tough, macho, I don't care what people think about me. The country needs to stop caring what people think about me. We need to stop being pushovers. We need to stop, you know, being extorted by the rest of the world. We need to stop being taken advantage of. You know, it's the anti-political correctness thing.
And I've had friends that have asked me, like, you don't know anybody that supports Trump, do you? I'm like, yeah, of course I do. And but they say, well, do you? Do they support Trump really, or do they just like lesser of the two evils? And I'm saying, well, most of them are lesser of the two evils, but I do know a few, and I'm always referring to like
he
people
got
like
more votes than any Republican candidate in history.
Yeah, I want to. Well, let's. But the key, I said, it's not just stupid people that are supporting Trump. There's a lot of smart people that are supporting him.
It's not necessarily him. It's what he represents.
That's what it is. And I explained. I said it's not so much. I mean, it could have been really anybody. Like Trump. I mean, it would have been preferable that it was somebody that was nicer.
Takes quite a mixture of persona to be able to pull off what he's doing.
Right. I mean, he's like throwing a wrench into the system. Like I think a lot of people want to see the whole system come crashing down, like you said, and it's almost fatalist. It's almost like, but at the same time,
well, sometimes
they know,
on the flip side of the coin, it's like this could be our last chance. Because I mean, if we get, you know, Hillary, it's just like another 4 years of Obama, and she's just going to amp it up.
I can see that, but
all
there is
of
a lot
his
of
policies.
Fear. A lot of fear. I try to remind my students, though, that it, you know, we do have checks and balances. That the president just can't do whatever they want. Last night,
but
the
I mean,
way
he
they
has
talking,
been
it seemed like
with the Syrian refugees and stuff. He's just executive ordering it. We're just going to do this. Ship them here. We don't care if your state doesn't want them or forcing you to take them.
But yeah, but checks. Okay, let me finish what I'm saying. Checks and balances. In terms of the way they were talking last night, it made it seem that the presidential candidates think that they're the ones who make the laws. And you might be right. That might be the precedent set by the increase by the last two administrations of executive orders. However, checks and balances still says that Congress can stop these executive orders.
Like Congress is supposed to control immigration. Well, our refugee thing's not immigration. They're refugees, so...
But I think
when the governor of a state can't even stop it, that's pretty outrageous.
Yeah, I think a lot of times though, Congress is on the same page as the president.
They are. I mean, that like I said, that's the Tea Party thing failed. This is the second wave. You don't want to know what the third one's going to be.
But I think you're right. The root of all this is the cronyism, and I think that's the left, right, the Sanders supporters on the left, and the Trump supporters on the right. It's all about getting rid of all the special interests and getting rid of the lobbyists and getting rid of politicians that are bought. And I think if we just had reforms in terms of some kind of major sweeping reform, whether it be a constitutional amendment, which I am for, or
term
something
limits.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some major legislation because it's a bipartisan thing that people, I always argue that most Americans agree more than they disagree. You wouldn't know it because of the rhetoric, than because of the media. But it, mm-hmm. I think if we all realize that, hey, guess what? We're all on the same team here. Most of us are. Most of us aren't super rich. Most of us don't want super high taxes, and we don't want a government that is overreaching. Most of us we live and let live for the most part. That's by far, and that's why I think, you know, it's really a shame that somebody like Gary Johnson has not, really gained steam because if he had a different personality.
Moron. I mean, I wanted to support the guy, but I mean, the one thing on the Libertarian Party I cannot agree with under any circumstances is just no borders. I mean, you just, the world we live in, you have to have national borders.
Do you disagree with the free trade thing too?
In principle, but if it's that unfair of a game, it can't be free. I mean, we can't have these ridiculously high labor standards, wage standards. You have to pay Social Security, you know, paid leave, you know, overtime laws and everything else that, you know, employers have to pay and corporate taxes, competing with $3 an hour in Juarez, Mexico. I mean, that's just crazy. Where it costs, you know, $30-$35 an hour to have an employee here and they can do it for $3. And the people are happy to work and will work harder for $3 an hour than people here. I mean, you know, because they did the numbers on what it costs to pay people to put tires on cars at Ford in Detroit, Michigan. By the time you accumulated everything that Ford Motor Company had to provide for them, it was like $97 an hour.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because all of the stuff, it's not just the, oh, we're trying to pay, you know, $18 an hour competitive wages. It's all that other stuff piled on top of it.
Right. And we forget so much. I tell my students as well, like, hey, we might be sending jobs away, and people are losing their jobs, it's much of the working class, but we get cheaper goods and services because of that. So you can't have both. You can't have both.
It's the consumer, but where are you going to get your job? If you work at Walmart, you can't afford to shop at Walmart.
Right. But here's the problem. Here's the dilemma. And it is kind of a catch-22. But these people who are losing their jobs, like, say, coal factories. Coal factories are becoming archaic. I mean, we have the with the rise of fracking, with the how solar power even is getting so cheap. I mean, coal power plants just don't make much sense in the future. And yet you hear politicians still pandering to people working in coal mines.
Especially
West
Virginia.
Say, we're going to keep your jobs here. We're going to keep your jobs in Pennsylvania. Don't you worry. Like Rick Santorum. I'm like, dude, all you're doing is pandering because you're not acknowledging economic reality here. These people are going to have to get new skills. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They need new skills to get new jobs. And my generation, I'm an old millennial. I know you're like a young Gen X. But younger people, they realize that, oh, hey, I'm probably not going to have this job for the rest of my life. I need to learn different skills here. I need to try different things. I need to constantly be adding tools to my toolbox, per se. And you can't expect anymore to just work at the same place for 40 years and retire there. This is not the economic reality we live in.
Especially not the place your father worked in for 40 years, you know, until he died of massive lung cancer.
But I kind of went off there. But, yeah, generally that's tough, too, because you know the president can't literally create jobs, and I guess unless you're FDR,
unless
maybe.
Government jobs.
Yeah, FDR
was not the kind you want. Because people with real jobs have to pay the people with government jobs.
Right. You're always taking away from someone else. And the productivity.
They never get rid of those people either. On the private sector, they do.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing to hear somebody.
Like 15,000 new IRS agents. Is that not the most terrifying sentence you've ever heard in your life? To enforce a health care law?
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty.
That's Obama creating jobs right there.
Well, we'll break a window, have a window breaker and then somebody that can fix that window. That's two jobs there. You can have somebody that goes around and breaks windows. I think back to our original point of the two major party candidates being so despised, when we've talked about that before, but I've looked at every presidential election in American history quite extensively now. I can't recall any time in American history we've had two major party candidates that have been this despised, this hated. It blows my mind, like, the times that we're living in right now. And It's exceptional. I can't think of another time. I really can't.
But I think you could even have candidates who, I mean, the hatred would still be there. I mean, they're going to vilify any Republican candidate. I mean, the mainstream media is just going to be all over it.
Well, the alternative, media, though, there's plenty in the alternative media that's going to vilify Hillary no matter what.
They're not the establishment media. I mean, you have to go find them. They don't control the airwaves of TV.
Not yet. They're getting close, though.
You find it everywhere. No, TV will die. TV news will die. And there's just, you know, and you saw it last night. I mean, Anderson, it's the epitome of why it's dying. When it's just that naked and that blatant, it's pretty bad. But, you know, and the conservatives are going to vilify whoever, you know, throw out it's just a socialist, communist, Trotskyite. Oh, you know, they're evil and they're sitting there corrupt, trying to destroy America. And you're going to get that. I mean, you know, Lincoln was certainly hated and reviled by a big percentage of the American population. But right, the other side, I mean, did the Republicans like go out of their way to vilify Stephen Douglas, John C. Breckinridge, and John Bell?
Yeah, I was going to say, you say the other side, but that's three distinct sides there. That was a four-way race in 1860.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big difference here. Because of all those four candidates.
Yeah, I mean, those people get credit, those other two, but they didn't stand a chance. I mean, the Constitution Party was the Libertarian Party.
Constitutional Union Party, yeah. I think in election of 1860, you had basically a situation where Stephen Douglas was like the centrist. And then you had the conservatives, which were John Bell and Breckinridge.
I think the Breckinridge, establishment guy, too.
He was, but so was, I mean,
the
really,
Republicans
technically.
Republicans were a third party.
They were a third party.
So that's where we're supposed to be going with this is, you know, when can a third party get somewhere? And I was trying to go there earlier and we just got sidetracked. You know, I want to support the Libertarian Party because it's kind of what I think most Americans are. But I just couldn't get by the, you know, past the open border thing, and like you said, the free trade thing is not all it's cracked up to be, especially not when you have some of the highest standards in the world and you're going to have free trade with developing nations and third world countries. It just can't do that's insanity. But you know, then just Gary Johnson, I mean, how much has that man blown this opportunity? I mean, he's on TV sticking his tongue out and having male strippers at the Libertarian Convention. They're like, how would you handle the situation in Aleppo? What's Aleppo? You know, Chris Matthews is like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, no, what's Aleppo?
That wasn't Chris Matthews. That was the other guy.
Well, what was it? I swear it was Chris Matthews.
You're talking about the mainstream media that you despise, by the way.
Oh, I've seen the clip a dozen times because people are just ragging him. And it's like, what's Aleppo? I don't know. And then where he couldn't name a single foreign leader that he admired.
Could you?
Yeah.
Who do you admire?
Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban.
Oh, no. No, he didn't.
Angela Merkel before she lost her mind. Now, there's certain things about them all I admire. Like, then they'll lacerate you. Like I said, Angela Merkel was doing great before she lost her mind.
Now, he later said that
Viktor Orban, nationalistic, protecting his country, like, listening to his people. 98% say we don't want massive refugee numbers. I mean, you have to admire that. You know, Vladimir Putin standing up to the globalists and actually fighting ISIS instead of arming them like we are.
He couldn't think of one because he said later on he didn't like any of them. That's what he said. And then as far as the Aleppo
thing.
Yeah,
you're covering your butt. But I could say, you know, Germany had a budget surplus of like $5 billion. And the economy was humming and it's doing great. And, you know, brought up everything. You know, Hitler's wet dream was Germany's power in Europe. And they were there. You know, now they're wrecking the country. you know, dividing the people, putting them on the verge of civil war. I mean, that's crazy. And you're not going to say Justin Trudeau, you know, a ballerina dancer, former kindergarten substitute teacher running a country.
I think that 95% of Americans didn't know what Aleppo was until he said that. So I think that none of us, except for maybe you and a few other social studies teachers.
He's running for president. He's running for president.
See, you're holding, you're holding a double standard here because we have two major party candidates.
Well, if you're going to run a country, you need to know
these things. Do you think if they would have asked Trump what Aleppo was, he would have known?
I've wondered that myself. I mean, they asked him that the other day, and it's one of the things about him that's kind of driving me crazy. He never really answered that.
He never answers very much.
The one before it, I mean, we watched it in my government class, you know, and I pointed it out like four or five times, you know, because we'd play a clip and then we'd go back and talk to us like, he didn't answer the question.
Well, I think that the whole thing has been overblown. Let me show you. I'm going to show you a cartoon that you might get a kick out of here if I can figure out the screen share thing.
Yeah, if we can get it to work.
There you go. You see it?
I see a black screen. There it is.
See, that kind of sums up the whole thing to me. I mean, you guys have Trump mistaking Scotland for England. You have Hillary that doesn't know the C means classified. You have bigotry on the Trump side. You have lies on the Hillary side. And then you have the mainstream media.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not.
Media who,
they're
who is
pretty much
for
ignoring the Libertarian
system.
Party. I mean, that's crazy. They're all over Trump. That's the most ridiculous cartoon. They just basically ignore them because they are a shill of the two-party system.
That's what it is.
So there's a point there, but I mean, they're not paying that much attention to Gary Johnson.
They're only paying attention to him.
They're
when
all
he makes
over
mistakes.
Trump bigotry. They never stop talking about it. They do ignore Hillary doesn't know C means classified.
But like
they
you
never
said,
stop attacking Trump.
But like you said, though, like people don't mind that Trump is ignorant on things, and they don't mind.
Well, I mean,
that
then it should be the American people, not the media. I mean, there's
me
a point there, but it's very
to me it's, well. But you're biased.
Misleading.
I mean, we're all biased. But it's refreshing to me to see that somebody like Johnson, who's like, yeah, I made a mistake, And because most people didn't know what Aleppo was, like he's like, oh, he is kind of like a normal guy. And you said, oh, well, we're expecting somebody. You don't
want
to
handle the situation in Aleppo.
Let me finish.
I mean, it's just embarrassing.
Let me finish. You said you don't want a normal guy being president.
Not making that kind of a decision. I mean, I know
because you have two really horrible characters. I'm talking about their personality. I'm talking about who they are as human beings, just despised human beings. You think that their characters are better than Gary Johnson or Joe
Stein?
I've
never said that. I'm just saying I want someone that actually knows what's going on. I mean,
oh, so you think Trump knows what's going on? Like, where's
the
evidence?
He learns pretty fast. He learns pretty fast.
He watches the TV shows.
He seems to listen to
the TV
people
shows.
When he kind of makes a mistake, and then people come along and they say, hey, maybe, maybe not. You know, he'll go back, and he learns quick. You know, he's not set in his ways like Hillary is. That's one of the things I like about him over her.
Well.
Oh, well, there's faults for sure. I mean, it is
I'm just
amazing.
Saying.
But like I said, I think it's a reflection of how bad it's gotten in the system and how it's just, you know, they were sitting there, Bush, Clinton, Clinton, Bush, Obama, oh, we're going to go back to Clinton or Bush.
Yeah.
I think it's way more reflective of that.
And the choices that we have is just like, it's always like, this is the best that we can do, you know? It's like, and that's why it's been hard for me to be more objective this election cycle because it's not like I'm for any of these people 100%.
It takes somebody like Trump with all of those credentials to pull off what he's doing.
You needed the name,
you need the popularity, you needed the money, you need the machismo, you need the ego.
Well, the marketing. He's a marketing genius.
The marketing, yes.
That's the key
here. I mean, he spent like almost nothing.
Now he's spending the money. But yeah, in the beginning, you're right. But he already had the brand.
Still, compared to what Hillary's spending, it's peanuts.
But it proves that most campaigns are all about, it's not about substance, it's just about brand and perception of what
now
you
more
think.
Than ever.
Right.
With the internet, until the UN shuts it down, which I can't believe we turned control of the internet over to the United Nations, by the way. That's another thing we need to talk about sometime.
I don't know anything about that.
Oh, wow. Gosh, the internet registry? The United States turned it over to the United Nations, so
that's not how the internet works.
We're talking the domain; they can pull down anything that they want. They control that switch now.
Spy on us, and but there's always
that too. But you know, if China or Saudi Arabia or someone's like, this is an offensive site, or they can. It ties in with that whole you can't criticize people for their religion and stuff like that. You know, the internet, the UN has all those panels and stuff.
But let me tell you something about the internet. It's it works from the bottom up. It's, if you've heard anything about the deep web, I mean, there's places, there's far reaches of the internet.
I've gotten lost on
the
internet before, believe me.
Yeah, I think it's out of, the cat's been long out of the bag. As much as they want to control it now, it's way too late for that. There's always going to be independent networks. There's always going to be servers that they can't find or shut down. I mean, it's
the domain registry. So,
I mean, that's,
I know there's subseeds and you can plant stuff underneath and hidden pages beneath pages. And
I need to learn more about it.
I don't know. We're out of our element here by far.
Yeah. Well, back to presidential candidates. Yeah. Let's talk about campaigns, because I mean, in previous years we did have. We had vicious campaigns. You saw this even at the beginning of our country's history. I think media, once we started having televised debates, that was a new level, because as somebody like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein would say, because they're not allowed in the debates, the debates are the Super Bowl of politics, and so therefore access to that means you're going to open the door to people that don't like politics that are all of a sudden, it's on every channel, I guess I'll start paying attention. And so this is their first impressions for many people. And therefore, if you were to go on the street and ask most people, they don't even probably know anything about Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. If they do know something about Gary Johnson, you're like, you mean the Aleppo guy, right? Because the mainstream media has been successful at making him the Aleppo guy. And when you actually learn about his policies, you'll find that most people tend to agree with
his policies. Like I said, about well over a third of America would fall right in line with that. That's the thing that I don't get. And that's the thing that takes me above and beyond just the no, they don't just hate Trump and want to destroy Trump. I think there's a bigger level here that's protecting that, I don't know, duopoly or whatever you want to call it, of this upper elite just running everything. Because like I said, it was Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Obama, let's go back, Clinton, Bush, whatever. Because you would think they would have trotted Gary Johnson out there and played him up as much as they possibly could if they thought he was going to take votes from Trump. You know, they would have given him all kinds of screen time and demanded. And then I heard on the other side, some of that alternative media was like, it turns out he may be stealing more votes from Hillary, because people are, they dislike her so much, but like you said, the contempt of Trump, that Trump shouldn't have participated in the debates without demanding that Gary Johnson be out there too, because each side's like, he's stealing votes from here and there.
Right.
I find it weird because, if the mainstream media thought he was going to hurt Trump, they would have played him up. I mean, they would have given him airtime. Either that or it's just no, Hillary's their girl, full bore, and we're going that way 100%. I mean, what are your thoughts on why they didn't demand that he get on stage, or that the mainstream media didn't play him up more?
It's a duopoly, like you said. I mean, it's not – it's not two different teams. It's one team, Republicans and Democrats, and the debates are ran by an organization called the Commission for Presidential Debates, and it's made up of only Republicans and Democrats. Not only that, let's look back at 1992. 1992, that video, I'm actually currently researching and working on the video for the election 1992. It's one of my favorite elections to look at. It's one of my earliest elections that I remember. And you know very well that Ross Perot had a very successful campaign that year. And the difference about 1992 compared to elections after 1992 was that Perot, he was truly an outsider, and in some ways like Trump, because he was also a billionaire. And somebody that was self-funding his campaign early on. It was grassroots for the most part early on. And this is a guy that before the Democrats or Republicans even had nominated their candidates, Clinton and Bush, was already polling higher than both of them, both Clinton and Bush Sr. In May of 1992, he was polling much higher than the other two. It freaked the establishment out. And they all of a sudden had a common enemy. They're like, well, hey, this guy's taking voters away from both of us. And really, that's a fallacy anyway. Anytime you say a candidate is taking votes away, it's the biggest fallacy you'll ever hear. There's no evidence for that at all. Whenever you support somebody or vote for somebody, and you agree with me on this, you're voting for them. You're not like, oh, I mean, because if you talk about opportunity costs, then you're going to be going down the world of what if for, you know, as long as you live. I mean, you can't play the what-if game in terms of history for very long before you go nuts. Let's face it. People that supported Ross Perot supported Ross Perot.
They were going to vote for the other two.
Now, Perot, interestingly enough, and what happened to him was he was getting viciously attacked by the media. They were paying attention to him, but he was getting viciously attacked. And then in July of 1992... he says later on that he dropped out of the race because his daughter was something about her her being humiliated because of some picture being exposed right before her wedding. That's the excuse he says for dropping. He dropped out of the race. Do you remember that? He dropped out of the race in July of 1992. The guy who was leading in the polls a couple months before that. And then he comes back in October and... I was like, oh, yeah, I'm back, guys. I'm running for president. And he never fully recovered to get that momentum that he had before. But he did finish with about 19% of the popular vote. And he didn't win any electoral votes.
In one election, was it 13 or 30 million votes that he got?
I don't remember that number, but I guess I can look it up real quick. But, yeah, the thing about Ross Perot is that he was... He was crusading against the special interests. He said that there should be things like term limits and that we need to, get rid of the lobbyists.
That's stuff that people have been saying as long as I can remember.
I liked him. Yeah, a lot of Americans liked him. I mean,
of course, in 92, I wasn't old enough to vote for him. 96, I would have been, but...
Yeah, neither was I.
Throwing your vote away.
Yeah, he got almost 20 million votes, like you were right. But yeah, so basically you have somebody who represents the majority of people's opinions who's shut out in the end, marginalized by both the Democrats and Republicans. They're like, and so this shows you that, and then he ran again in 1996. In 1996, he had more organization this time. It was more... it felt more like an establishment. He formed a political party called the Reform Party, which later Pat Buchanan ran on and all that. 1996, he didn't do so well. He only got about 8% of the popular vote. And you want to know why? He wasn't allowed to participate in the debates.
This is the first year
that the debates were ran by
the
commission.
And you're going up against a popular incumbent president.
That's part of it. But the Commission for Presidential Debates was now in charge of the debates. They had the final say. They were the gateway to the general American public, and that commission is made up of only Republicans and Democrats. And therefore, ever since then, there's been a movement to try to sue this organization for breaking the First Amendment, because you're essentially silencing a huge chunk of the population. And if you don't have a true freedom of speech, freedom of press, like freedom of access to information to who you're supposed to vote for, then how is that truly going to be beneficial to democracy? So we haven't had that since 1992.
And the way around it, of course, is, you know, they say, oh, if you get 15%, if you poll at 15%, you can participate.
Which is a catch-22. There's no way you can poll 15% unless people know about you. Because what did they do when they polled? They said, who are you going to vote for? You're going to vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? And then they'd say, oh, I don't know. And then they'd ask them this question. Now, if there were three choices, would you vote for Trump, Clinton, or Gary Johnson? And they didn't even bring up Gary Johnson when they polled most of these polls, if you actually look at how they asked the polls. And so to me, I don't care if you support Gary Johnson or Jill Stein or anybody. I don't care who you support. There needs to be reform with how we do this. I mean, I know we're going to have Jeff on, and he's going to be on probably about
13 minutes.
Yeah, so he can go into more of this, but more about the history of this. We've had, let me just go through the list of all the presidential elections where we've had significant third party candidates. So I got to pull up my, own channel because I don't have this completely by memory. But for the first few years of our country, we had Federalists and Anti-Federalists, and it was very binary. I mean, then we had the Democratic Republicans versus the Federalists, and it was still like either or. You're either with us.
We used to have a lot of 3- and 4-party elections.
Yeah, let me pull up the 1796 was a little weird. 1796.
Sometimes you had like 3 Democratic Republicans running against the Federalists, and a Democratic Republican still won.
That was 1796.
And another one came in second. That's crazy.
Yeah. And well, part of that was the fact that the Electoral College in 1796 was the vice president was whoever got the second place in the total number electoral votes.
Yeah, but still that one came in first and another one came in second.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, shows you how much they hated John Adams.
Well, in 1812, we had a... Looks like 1812, we did have somewhat of a third party. We had a that wasn't purely. I'm going to jump ahead actually because I'm thinking. What was it? 1836 is the one I'm trying to think of where we had. I'm trying to do this by memory. Yeah, no, it was 1832. 1832, you had. I got to make sure I get this right. Okay, 1832, you had actually 4 candidates, but you had a significant third party for the first time. It was the first true third party, the Anti-Masonic Party. And have you heard
Talk
of this party?
About establishment. Boy, there you go with the Masons run the country.
Yeah, William Wirt was their candidate.
Power behind the throne.
So, and then the crazy 1836 election was you had the Democratic side, which the Democratic Party had just started, you know, with Andrew Jackson a couple elections before that.
Our boy.
The Whigs, they decided to run 4 different candidates against Martin Van Buren. Yeah, it was, you know, in retrospect, it was a pretty stupid idea, but the strategy was to try to get it so that you wouldn't reach a majority number, so you'd have to go to Electoral College.
Makes sense. I mean, there had to be a strategy to it. You divide up the votes so many different ways. Right. And still, we could say, hey, look, the Whigs got so many more votes because there's like 4 candidates, like people that go in there don't know what they're doing. You know, 80% chance they're going to pick a Whig.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just bringing up the Wikipedia page. I don't even care.
Handsome man. Look at that. Who is that? Daniel Webster? Check out his hair, man. are not jealous.
Yeah, those are the 4 wigs that they ran. Let's see.
They need
here.
Wigs. My gosh.
Here we go.
At my jokes, Matt. Laugh at my jokes. It's dead air.
Ah, ha, ha. It's a wigs. Okay.
They need wigs.
1848, you had the Free Soil Party, and you had Martin Van Buren, of course, who was already well-known because he was a former president. He only got 10% of the vote, but still pretty significant. No electoral votes, so that's a big flaw there of the Electoral College. And I want to get to that, too, because there was a significant effort in the 70s to get rid of the Electoral College. Did you know that?
I know they've tried before.
We were really close. 1852, you had the Free Soil Party again. They got about 5%. And then, see, the 50s were crazy.
Do you have any info on why the Free Soil Party never managed to take off, but the Republican Party did?
Because the Republican Party was more mainstream. That Free Soil obviously was a single issue party. They said, okay,
up
slavery
the wigs
sucks
and stuff like that.
Yeah, was the Republicans? They were kind of more.
It's a timing thing, I imagine.
That's part of it too.
Republicans, so we have the Republican Party today because the Whig Party died, and the Free Soil was on the way up. The Whig was on the way down. It sucked it up in its vacuum, and the right candidate at the right time with Honest Abe, and boom, there it goes. That's why some work and others don't.
Right. Well, the Know-Nothing Party was another interesting one. I think the Know-Nothing Party can be traced directly to, if you look at more recent elections, like George Wallace, his campaign and well, his campaigns in 68 and 72. If you look even to the Republican, like I think a lot of Trump supporters are kind of, nativism is kind of tied a lot to a lot of their beliefs, and I think that's rooted in, there's always been a strong nativist movement going back to the...
You think it's nativism or nationalism, or
I think,
what's the difference?
I think they're interlinked. I mean, they're not,
yeah,
they're not the
same thing.
There's
a textbook definition difference, but...
Well, nativism is a preference over people who are already here, whereas nationalism is just extreme pride in your country.
Word.
To a point where you're better than other countries.
Yeah.
And then 1860 we already talked about, but then for many years after the Civil War we did have more, we had more binary choices here. An interesting thing about 1872 is you had Republican versus Republican. You had
liberal Republican.
Yeah, like the Democrats weren't even, like most Democrats, they just decided to support Horace Greeley. Because we're like, well, I mean, we just hate Grant. We got to,
well,
anybody but Grant.
Well, just the Democrats during Reconstruction stood no chance of winning.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So we'll go with, like you said, who's not Grant. That's crazy. That's a fascinating fact I did not know. 1872, there was no Democrat candidate.
Another
that's
fact,
how bad it was.
Well, I mean, but, you know, back to 1820, James Monroe didn't even have an opponent. I mean, he basically was so popular with most Americans that he's like, ah, all right, that's fine. Let him have a second term. Horace Greeley, another fun fact about him is he died right before the, or right around the time
see,
of the election.
See, it's not just a Hillary Clinton thing. Opponents were dying back in the 1870s.
You're saying she's dying?
No. Saying opponents have a tendency to fall over dead.
Let's see. We're back to two choices for the most part, and then we're going to jump ahead to the populist movement. James B. Weaver.
What a great name.
9%. Yeah, and then look at that.
How do you not
map.
Get more than 9% with a name like James B. Weaver? They wrote songs about him.
James. Yeah, he doesn't get much more American than James Weaver.
Get me through the night. It's 1892.
But what happened to the populist movement? Well, it got hijacked by the Democratic Party.
Yep. Always so, pick up the popular issues.
So William Jennings Bryan, he was their boy for about a decade.
Yeah.
And then, of course, oh, and then you got elections like this where you have Parker, Alton B. Parker, 1904. I mean, really? They didn't care. The Democrats knew they were going to lose no matter who they nominated. So they're just like, whatever.
Well, yeah, they still got 140 electoral votes.
But they're protest votes. Because
well, look, I mean, the popular vote was not that bad.
But there was actually a study about this. I should pull it up that most people Let's see. Most people vote out of fear of the other candidate.
Boy, that's true. Like that. You got that in this election. That's how, you know, that feeds into the how do you get two of the most unpopular candidates ever.
Well, yeah, that's vote against other candidates.
Because it's like if they just had a likable Republican, you would think, man, Hillary's the most beatable ever. And same on the other side, you know?
Yeah.
Someone that just people didn't find repulsive, they could say, man, you know, Donald Trump, this divisive character, let's, you know, throw, like if they just had some handsome young Democrat man, you know, with that golden smile, you know, those guys.
Imagine if Mitt Romney was running in 2016 against Hillary Clinton or.
I mean, he was just so soft, though.
But he would, I think he would have.
He was so soft.
Ahead.
It's like Trump's the anti-Romney. You know, he wouldn't fight in the debates or any. He did in the first one, and then people intimidated him and told him to back off and not be so mean, and then he just got crushed.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the 1912, I think a lot of history teachers love to teach about this election, not only because Theodore Roosevelt got shot and kept giving a speech anyway, but the it was a four-way race. I mean, it was kind of what we'd like to see every election, where you have more choices. Like,
how many votes did Debs get? If you can scroll down, can see it.
Almost a million, 901,000.
Taft got 3.4. Teddy got 4.1.
It's like in my video, I said, look at this electoral map. It's just like so weird, so hard to digest that compared to what we're used to today. I mean, there's no distinct pattern that you can decipher.
Can you pull up the electoral map? Does that have a scroll on it there like the election deal does? Or you could go to the next electoral map and the next one? I don't think it. Maybe it was election 1900. There's one of them that's like the solid South is red and the rest of the country is blue, and it's just like a map of the Confederacy down there. I think it's the election of 1900 or 1912, one of those two.
I think it gets more that way when you get to the later elections, actually.
Maybe 1920.
See, look at this one. Oh, except for Tennessee there, I guess.
Yeah, there's one.
The reverse.
Maybe 24.
Oh, there we go.
Look at
it
that.
24, yeah.
That's basically a map of the Confederacy.
And this is, remember, still, you know, solid.
That's 1924, Democrats. 40. That's 60 years later.
Yeah.
Who is La Follette?
La Follette, you know him. The
good
progressive
rock. Look at the hair on that man.
Oh, you don't teach about La Follette? He's a pretty fascinating guy.
I mean, I don't have time for fascinating. I have time for what's on the test.
He was Bernie Sanders before Bernie Sanders. Like,
Boy.
Yeah. Got Wisconsin. So, yeah, that was another three-way race. He got almost 17% of the vote there. So that was very similar. I think when you combine what the support that both Johnson and Stein are going to get this year, I think it's going to be end up being probably about 13%, 12-13%, I think.
Okay.
It's all
is our boy going to show up at 9, you said?
Is it that time?
It's 9 o'clock.
All right, we'll just keep talking if he's enjoying. And look at this. Will you ever see this again? Will you ever see a candidate so popular that, I mean, we saw it in the 80s with Reagan.
Reagan and Nixon did it.
And Nixon, who I would compare, of all the presidential candidates in the history of our country, I would compare Hillary Clinton the most to Richard Nixon. Would you agree with that?
Well, not politically, that's for sure.
They're not that much different politically. I mean, Nixon was a big government guy. I mean, he was a...
When he started a lot of government agencies and stuff. I mean,
oh yeah,
EPA, I mean, and wasn't the Department of Education like originally his idea?
Yeah, but it wasn't started till the Carter administration. But yeah, we're back to the two
Thomas
choices again.
Dewey is a freaky looking dude.
Yeah. We had Strom Thurmond of the Dixiecrat Party that was short-lived for one election. And, of course, based on the Jim Crow laws, the segregation primarily there. And then back to two choices again. Adlai Stevenson, who I talked about earlier, man, he was a pretty smart dude. They called him an egghead.
I grabbed him by the nose and kicked him in the butt.
What?
Look at that. 464? Like, how does that happen?
Back to...
what the heck?
I mean, Goldwater was just like... I think Goldwater was... there was much fear against him.
I knew the Democrats dominated, but that's crazy.
Yeah, he only won the South, the Deep South in his home state.
What's that say, 486 to 52?
Yeah, 61.1% of popular vote. That was, I believe, the highest in history. I could be wrong.
What was going on in Arizona? Is that where Barry Goldwater's from?
Yeah, that's where he was from. Yeah. But then George Wallace, like I said, and this is in 68, where he gets the 13.5%. And again, back to the Dixiecrats that were for Thurmond a few years before. Look at that one. There's Nixon.
Yep.
And then we got
George McGovern for president.
Back to two. And then I just did the video for this about a week and a half ago. I released it where you have John B. Anderson, who nobody remembers, but he got almost 7% of the vote. And for a while there, he was also polling at about 20%, kind of similar to Ross Perot. I mean,
just some people walk into the booth, they just can't pull the trigger.
Right. It's
now
it's
they'll
fear.
Poll for him. They'll say, oh, man, we'd love for Gary Johnson. Like, you know, there's a coworker of mine that's just Gary Johnson, Gary Johnson, Gary Johnson, you know, going to do it. And I believe that he will. But it's like, you know, when you go into the booth and it's like, this guy really stands no chance.
But here's a question for you that's very legitimate. If you live in a state that's not a swing state, like say Hillary's up by 20 points or like Oklahoma where you live, it's solidly red. Why would you think that you got to fear that Hillary's not going to win Oklahoma? I mean, Hillary's not going to win Oklahoma. There's no way she's going to win Oklahoma. So why not have a protest vote for a third party candidate?
Well, because I mean, there's still the numbers at the end. I mean, I know what you're saying, but it's that attitude. It's like saying I don't count as much as someone in Ohio, where it literally could. You know, if enough people did that, it would make a difference. And the sad thing is, if you live in southwestern Oklahoma in this election, no, your vote does not count as much as someone from Ohio. Just like in previous elections.
But the Electoral College, though.
Ohio, Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, their vote does count way more than mine in this election. Way more.
It does. But we have that crappy Electoral College system. So, I mean, if we have it, then you know that it's all or nothing at the state level. So why even bother wasting your vote on, like, say you live in Oklahoma and you're kind of on the fence. You're like, I don't know who I want. I don't like either of them. But I'm really scared of Trump, so I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, it doesn't matter. You're wasting your vote if you're in Oklahoma, because there's no way that Hillary Clinton is going to win Oklahoma. So you should vote for someone that represents your views. And that way, they have more of a voice.
The problem is, for some, there may not be anyone there that represents their views.
Write in a name.
That's crazy.
In a candidate. I mean, we do know that Johnson and Stein are on most ballots. In fact, I think Johnson's on all 50.
Libertarians
Stein's on 40
made it all.
Yeah.
It's 36 and 50, I think.
But, I mean, you could write in somebody. You could.
Our voter counter system in my state would register a written in name.
Probably not. Oklahoma has horrible laws.
It's like the Libertarian Party. You know, it's not. You can't register as a Libertarian here.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice if you didn't have to register as a political party at all, in my opinion. I think George Washington was right. Political parties...
could be interesting.
I mean, we...
of course,
we
can't have 10,000 names on the ballot. You have to have some rules. Has to be something.
You do have rules. Yeah. I mean, I think there's things naturally filter out. You know, like, for example, you look at... if you ever checked out Vermont, Vermont has some...
yeah, there's the
pretty crazy...
beacon of light.
Well, but
setting
look
a
at their
standard for everyone.
They have. Have you ever watched some of their debates for their? Because they'll have like some legitimate candidates.
Oh, we
and they'll
got
have, like,
someone.
The crazy...
we got a visitor.
There he is. Hello, welcome, Jeff from No More Two Party System has joined us. We've been talking about presidential elections the entire episode, pretty much. We actually just got done talking about how ballot access is different in every state and how that can be a challenge for third party candidates, and we went through
how I cannot register as a libertarian in Oklahoma because it's essentially blocked by the Republican Party, so we'll let this guy go.
First of all, if you go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody.
Well, hello, my name is Jeff, and can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
I can.
All right, I'm Jeff, and I'm with the group No More Two-Party System, and we work to promote voter choice of options beyond the two-party system as well. We have a YouTube channel that we make videos that help people have conversations and refute the excuses that people cling on to that they use regarding staying with the two-party system, even though they want to leave the two-party system. And we've got a lot of great interviews with notable public figures like Bernie Sanders and Gary Johnson. We got a Jill Stein interview coming up. So it's a great resource for people who want exposure to ideas about leaving the two-party system and the alternative political party candidates and independents that you're not going to get from mainstream media. And sadly, you won't even get it from a lot of indie media that complains about the two-party system, but then uses all their time, talent, and treasure to perpetuate the two-party system narrative by focusing on Trump and Clinton. So No More Two-Party System is also has a goal of organizing self-governing chapters. So there is a resource there that if people want to get involved and engage locally, they can create their own self-governing chapters. I have political organizing experience with the No on 8 campaign, which was one of the largest political campaigns in California, and not only California history, but nationwide history. So I've got a lot of good organizing experience that I'm happy to share with people who would like to help work towards getting rid of the two-party system in our lifetime, or should I say, in effect, two-party system.
That's great. Yeah. I think first thing I thought of there is what you said, even the supposed alternative media, you know, they complain about the two-party system, and then what do? Like, well, let's just look at what Trump said. Well, let's look at what Hillary said. Every time they open up their news, and they just kind of pretend that the other candidates don't even exist. Imagine if you turned on the news, and all you heard was, well, the two presidential candidates faced off today, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, and it looks like it's going to be a close race between those two, and you never even bring up anyone else. Imagine.
That would be an interesting approach.
Their poll numbers all of a sudden go away. Like the Young Turks, if they just did that, or InfoWars, if they just did that, like, to completely ignore the mainstream candidates. Of course, I say InfoWars, but they're fully on board with Trump this year.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I agree with you. And let's take those two examples. You know, the InfoWars crowd tends to be more conservative-ish. The Young Turks crowd seems to be more liberal-ish, and not strictly, but generally speaking. And you have both sides who have done nothing but complain about the establishment for years and years and years, and yet they use their time, talent, and treasure and vast resources to perpetuate the two-party system narrative. And what a shame. Back in 2012, I attended in Los Angeles one of the few alternative political party debates that was organized by a group called Maggie Fair Institute. I don't know if they're even still around. They're not organizing one this year. But anyway, there was an alternative party debate, and The Young Turks was there, but as far as I could tell, they only interviewed Roseanne Barr, who was running with the Green Party at that time, and everything revolved around the spectacle of her running. None of their questions were about policy or issues. It was just about the celebrity factor of Roseanne running. So it's really absurd to, it's like Bill Maher of Real Time with Bill Maher. He complains about how Republican like Obama is, but then he gets into that two-party system hostage excuse narrative. It's really sad.
I agree. Yeah, Roseanne Barr, that's right. I forgot that she actually got quite a few votes there in 2012. Let me look at the numbers here. I think she, this is kind of proof that, but yeah, you're right. It's about the ratings. It's about getting the viewers. I mean, as long as it's about getting the viewers, then they're only going to look at conflict and, you know,
so the
drama.
Media must think Americans really aren't that interested in the third party system, or they would feed into it. Or it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, how it's just all one system anyway.
Right.
So which would you tend to agree with on that?
Well, it's in, you know, Roseanne Barr was a celebrity who ran. Donald Trump is a celebrity who ran. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a celebrity who ran. But you see that Roseanne Barr was treated very differently because she didn't run within the two-party system. So Arnold Schwarzenegger was instantly treated legitimately. Donald Trump was instantly treated legitimately. But Roseanne Barr was not. And she was not even given equal coverage. And when she was on any entertainment media venues, it still revolved, you know, they would deflect. They would downplay her run. They would minimize it if they would even bring it up at all. So it's a blatant two-party system narrative bias. Now, we have to remember that any of us can search this online. The major media in America is owned by about six corporations. No doubt some of those corporates, the sponsors who hold up those media venues, are probably a lot of overlap between those who sponsor and donate to the failed two-party system. So, of course, they have an incentive to keep the voters in the dark because they want to protect the establishment quo. And not to mention, some of there's also overlap, and some of them have worked for certain political figures, and then they go into work in media. So, did you see Maria Shriver's interview with Jill Stein that came out this week?
I saw that you posted that, yeah, and I she was just, like you said, with every other interview, it's like, don't you think you're taking votes away from Hillary Clinton? You know, that's basically what it revolved around. Which is a myth that you take votes away from people. No, you're usually voting. You're either voting against somebody that we talked about earlier, or you're voting for someone. You're not stealing votes. That's not. Spoiler effect is, it's hard to prove that the spoiler effect actually exists because it deals with opportunity cost. And I had my Ralph Nader video that you, of course, that's how we met online, that really disproves that. The election of 2000 is the greatest example of how the, you know, you have blame for excuses, basically. You have a candidate, Al Gore, who just doesn't do the job. He's a boring candidate. He's not inspiring, and he loses his home state of Tennessee. And then, well, we got to blame somebody.
I mean, exactly. I mean, people vote for who they vote for, but like, take Jesse Ventura. You know, he was able to win as a third party candidate because people voted for him. They literally went to the polls and voted for him, and he got the most votes. Therefore, he won. You know, who are they going to blame if he would have barely lost? Who would they blame? Would they say, oh, well, it was the Republicans' fault?
Well, if we want to put some blame out there, why don't we just blame the founding fathers and say, how dare you not make the United States a tyranny, a dictatorship? How dare you give us choice and democracy? Now you've cost this Democrat or this Republican the election. I wish, you know, I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, I mean,
and the other thing,
George Washington could have been king.
You know, you just mentioned Ralph Nader, but the Republicans will cite Ross Perot. So both sides are playing this game of hostage, or this game of chicken, or whatever you want to call it, where they cite Ralph Nader or Ross Perot. And one of the ways I like to address this is, one, to say this is a nation of millions of people. You are not having a realistic expectation if you think everybody is going to conform into being a Democrat or Republican. Number one. Number two, the math is not there. When you look at Pew and Gallup research, the majority of Americans are registering as independent or they're not voting. So when they're not registering as Democrat or Republican, when they have the option to, or they're not voting, that right there is telling you that that's a lack of endorsement, if you will, of those two major parties. But at this point, it's mostly a game of psychological warfare, just like it was with marriage equality, like the women's right to vote, like ending racial segregation. As much as there's a legal battle, there's also a psychological warfare battle here.
I want to bring that up, the Minnesota gubernatorial election again, because I'll put it on the screen that you guys, so you guys can see. This here... This is evidence that third parties don't play the spoiler role. And what's crazy about this election, I've always been fascinated by this. Minnesota has always been a little bit different. They're usually a little bit more independent than most states are. But yeah, Jesse Ventura, 1998, ran on a third party, the Reform Party, which wasn't that new. And he defeated...
Yeah, which was a more conservative-leaning party. And look who came in second.
See, they didn't have the resources that the Republicans and Democrats had, and yet they still, like, despite having less money and being more grassroots, they won the election. And what always amazes me about this election more than anything is a story that Jesse Ventura tells right after he was inaugurated as the governor. He said he – I don't know if you guys – stop me if you've heard this before, but he received a strange visit by the CIA – and it made him very uncomfortable. He said he wrote about this on numerous times in a couple of his books. He wrote about it. He said they asked him all these questions about basically how did you do this? How were you able to defeat both Republicans and Democrats to do this? And they really sincerely wanted to know.
Well, click on that DFL under Skip Humphrey. Click on that DFL. What is that?
Oh, Democratic Farmer Labor Party.
Is that their Democrat party up there?
It's affiliated with the Democratic Party, so they had the resources of the Democratic Party.
So they have
their
primaries.
By the way, Skip Humphrey, I believe he is the son of Hubert Humphrey, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he's the son of Hubert Humphrey, who ran for president in the 70s. Anyway, so the fact that the CIA was there questioning him, interrogating him, making him feel uncomfortable and like his life was in danger... That is craziness. I know that kind of delves into conspiracy.
Well, he's into all that conspiracy stuff anyway. So.
But you shouldn't conflate.
But I don't doubt
that.
It.
Yeah, like let's just isolate that from all the other stuff. I mean, that's a crazy story to me.
That's the kind of crap that makes you get into conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I mean, when you have such concentrated power, and it's always been there. The difference now, it
who
seems...
Who was president? When was he in office? I don't mean to interrupt, but when was that election?
Oh, 1998.
98, so that'd have been late 98.
Right.
It'd be interesting to know who was in power when that... Is it Clinton years?
Yeah, it was Clinton.
I was trying to do the math. He was out in 2000, so yeah, it's Clinton.
Sorry, Matt, one thing I wanted to address, though, is, you know, you brought this example up as Jesse Ventura not being a spoiler. But I think we also have to be careful about how we engage this conversation with people who are on the fence or afraid of leaving the two-party system and voting out of the two-party system. Let's say that, you know, I'm sure you've already covered the Ralph Nader example about how a lot of Democrats voted for Bush. All these examples that prove that the spoiler effect theory is not true in the Ralph Nader case. But let's say hypothetically that it was somehow true. Let's say that all these people polled afterwards would have said, yeah, we voted Ralph Nader. We would have voted for Gore, but we voted Ralph Nader. Let's say hypothetically that happened. That still doesn't change the fact that we are entitled to vote for who we want for. So even if it had cost Gore the election, which I reject that premise anyway, but even if the math supported it to an extent, by again, hypothetically, Nader supporters had chosen Nader, but secondly, they would have wanted Al Gore, that's no excuse. This is still a democracy, or supposed to be a representative democracy, so we can't give in to fear Now, I'd love to see some better voting systems, but the better voting systems are not in place. So some sort of ranked choice voting. But anyway, I just want to be careful about the fact that we can't, I guess we have to also be careful to an extent to say, you know, even if you could prove spoiler effect, that's still no good reason not to vote your conscience. We can't elect principled representatives if we're not principled voters to begin with. And also, again, this is not a two-party system dictatorship.
But my question for really both of you guys is, because we know that people vote out of fear, especially this election, because when they go to the voting booth, they're not passionately usually voting for someone. They're like, well, I just am afraid of this person getting in. How do we solve that dilemma? I mean, don't you think we need to have a different system other than first past the post or electoral college where like maybe more of like a ranking voting or alternative voting is another way of saying it. Wouldn't that solve this problem?
I think there's, when you talk to the election, what do you want to call them? The election political nerds, the election political junkies. There's a lot of different ideas about different types of ranked choice voting. But I'll say this. I would ask this question. What incentives do Republicans and Democrats have to change the election laws to make them fairer or more competitive so that alternative parties can become viable? They have no incentive to do that. They have lavish lifestyles. They make millions of dollars, not only from, they don't make millions from their wages as a person elected office, but they make a lot of money from their book deals, from their appearances, from their speeches, and not to mention all the lavish gifts that they get from lobbyists. So they have no incentive to leave behind that lifestyle and allow that lifestyle to be jeopardized by making fair election laws. So as much as we want some sort of ranked choice voting and money out of politics, we have to accept the reality that Democrats and Republicans have this monopoly of power, and they're not going to give that up easily. So we I'm not saying that's an either-or situation. We can work on this objective and that objective, but we need to stop voting for them over and over expecting different results. And really, at the end of the day, if you stop voting for them, they stop winning. And again, it's an issue of psychological warfare.
But the problem is the people are still voting for them like this. It's like the people are uninformed, and I think the root of the problem is the media, I believe, like because, like you said, it's people, they're intimidated almost.
And, yeah, they're the voice. I mean, they're up and above and beyond what the two-party system is, because they're the voice of everything. They're the ones who decide what the news is. Like he said, they're the ones who decide who get the airtime.
Yeah, there's a show on right now. I accidentally watched it the other day, and it's kind of a bad show, but it's on ABC, I believe, and it's about how this news channel essentially just creates news. They create the national conversation. It's pretty much not far from the truth. I mean, the news is what we make of it. I mean, they strategically, like we talked about earlier with the Trump tape, they strategically waited for that one day to release that. And it's funny how just a few media outlets had the narrative that everybody else carried after that. We all, even like if you...
Oh, the same talking points every time. I don't know if you've ever seen where Rush Limbaugh does that drive-by media thing, where it's the exact same soundbite on every single channel.
Conan O'Brien does
that. They have
their
talking points. It's like delivered to them by somebody.
Yeah, I saw the, I didn't see the Rush Limbaugh version, but I saw the Conan O'Brien version, and like it was about spring, and they all literally said the same phrase, spring has sprung, or something like that, and every sentence after that was nearly identical. But that just goes to show you the importance of how we need to build up real indie media, real alternative media, like No More Two-Party System and your channel. And I think you're seeing a backlash, too, when you look at the comments of the Young Turks on their YouTube videos when they talk about Jill
the
Stein or Eric Johnson.
On their most videos.
Yeah. You're seeing a big rebellion from their audience. I like to pat myself on the back and say I was ahead of the curve, because I've been calling them out since 2012. And I interviewed Michael Shore, their epic politics man. And in the interview, he admitted his media bias by saying they're not going to win, which is part of the brainwashing and conditioning. So not only do you have media blackout, but when they do get media coverage, it's always in a derogatory context. Yeah. It's always, well, it's a derogatory context where they condition voters and brainwash voters to be afraid of them. So they use words like underdog, spoiler, the fringe. And by the way, we get called the fringe. Well, if the two-party system gives us lie-based war, poverty, pollution, eradication of civil liberties, $18 trillion in debt. If we're fringe because we're not down with that, then I guess I'm okay being fringe, because what prevails as the majority is not something that I'm comfortable with. It's frankly crimes against humanity from these failed two major parties.
Now, those names and labels don't have the impact they used to. That's for sure.
But I, you know, you talked about how do we reach the movable middle, and it's really interesting because when I engage online with the more Democratish crowd, it's more so of lesser of evil kind of arguments. But when I engage with the more Republicanish crowd, they very much do support Trump, and they think he is an alternative party. They think he is a third party candidate in disguise, and I'm out with that. I mean, to me, when he nominates Mike Pence as his vice presidential pick and he talks about wanting judges like Scalia on the Supreme Court, that doesn't come off as anti-establishment. That comes off as authoritarian to me. But when I do engage with these people, I'll say, okay, if you absolutely must vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, can you at least dip your toes into the water voting out of the two-party system in your local elections, especially on the boring stuff like insurance commissioner and
judge,
attorney general, judge, stuff like that? Yeah. You know, and I think those are different state to state. You know, here in California, we elect our insurance commissioner, our attorney general, stuff like that. So vote out of the two-party system in those local elections if you're absolutely afraid to do it with Trump or Clinton. At least start dipping the toes in the water. And it's interesting, though, when I engage with most people online, the majority of them cannot defend the two-party system. The majority, because the way I break it down is, look what they give us: lie-based war, poverty, pollution, eradication of civil liberties, and $18 trillion in debt. They can't defend that record. And that record is collectively given us by both Democrats and Republicans.
And you just mentioned issues that people on the left and the right agree on. And I love how you're nonpartisan. You're not promoting one particular third party. You're just saying anything but Republican Democrats to get us a better democracy in this country. And one point I wanted to make before I forget is that we've always had binary choices since the beginning of since George Washington. The difference now is, for the first time, we have the internet that can easily give us information about anybody at a click in an instant. Ignorance is no longer an excuse. All you have to do is just do a little bit of, like, 5 minutes of research, and then, oh, I did that for my local elections. Like, oh, there's all these other people running. I don't have to just automatically click, go with my team, my political party, my tribe. And so I feel that the younger people, you've seen this, like with the backlash against Clinton, the support for Sanders, the support for Stein and Johnson, the millennials are understanding that what's been happening their entire lives has not been working. We've had more of the same. It's just basically, okay, you're wearing a different uniform, but you're still the same establishment type. And I feel like Donald Trump is an example of somebody who kind of lucked out and took advantage of that. He saw that. I think it could have been anybody. I think I'd rather – we talked about this before, Robert and I. It would have been much better if it was somebody like Mark Cuban or something, because he's a more decent human being, in my opinion. But still, somebody like Trump was waiting to come around, because we needed somebody that was powerful to break in there, and that's always what it comes down to. It's always these powerful people that give the third party – or outsider. It's funny how they call him an outsider when he's a billionaire. But anyway, an outsider to come in and try to break things apart, like George Wallace. I mean, I know that's a bad example now, but 1968, George Wallace was a household name, and so he could get away with running for a third party because a lot of people. Whereas Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, I mean, come on, like, nobody knew who these people were until they heard Aleppo, or until they heard that Jill Stein was spray painting something. Yeah, like that's where we're at. And we can sit here and complain about the ignorance of voters, but I think it's the responsibility, again, back to the media. The media, it wasn't like it is. I mean, we have the media today, but we can't blame that on, like, back in, say, in 1804. In 1804, people thought they only had two choices, too, though. And you didn't have six corporations that control the media. So what's the difference there? What's your simple answer to the response, like, well, you can't just blame the media when we've always had binary choices for the most part in our country's history. What's your response to that?
Well, we can blame the media because there is a big there is power in repetitive messages. So when you repeat spoiler, underdog, long shot, fringe to describe the Green Party, to describe the Libertarian Party, then that constant repetition is a big psychological brainwashing of the masses to have this fear of voting out of the two-party system. And then, unfortunately for Jill Stein, unfortunately for Gary Johnson, they have a much higher standard of, how do you say it? They have a higher standard of being perfect, if you will. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
But when they make the gaffes like Aleppo, or when something happens like Jill Stein sort of having a Sarah Palin moment when she was asked what kind of environmental technology she likes, and she said all of them, and then people were making comparisons to Sarah Palin. When they have those little mistakes and hiccups, that gets amplified and exaggerated, which already happens in a regular two-party system race, but then it's just it becomes validation for these mainstream people to say, see, you know, they're not perfect, so you better, you know, Gary Johnson doesn't know what Aleppo is, so you better succumb to the people who have given us lie-based war, poverty, pollution, eradication of civil liberties. Of course, they don't put it that way. They just say, you know, don't stray from what you know, because what you know is at least familiar. It's at least comfortable. So you know the poison that you're getting so far with the two-party system. But yeah, media is very powerful. And I really see a big parallel in the marriage equality movement. I'll share with you that I'm a gay man, so I've got a comparison here to make. I think this is nearly a very similar situation in that we lived in a nation that was vehemently anti-gay, predominantly. You know, very few Americans supported marriage equality, let alone gay people in general. And so, you know, we go back and we had elections with people like Anita Bryant and all this horrible stuff that happened to LGBT people back in years past. And we're seeing some of that with these bathroom bills. But the media had an impact by putting a human face on the issue. And so the human face was not only in everyday TV shows like Will and Grace, and then Ellen coming out and having her own talk show and all these things, but it was also, I'm not a fan of this particular campaign, but I do credit the No Hate campaign, where everybody was putting tape on their mouth and putting stickers on their face that said no hate. And almost everybody on Facebook around 2008 and 2009 had one of those pictures. Now, again, I wasn't a huge fan of that campaign for other reasons, but I do give a credit where credit is due. I think that then it became a trendy thing. Then you had celebrities, even Larry King and all these, Jill Stein even took a picture with them people. So everybody was having these tape on the mouth and no hate stickers. So it became a trendy campaign. Then you even started seeing, as the years went by in 2010, 11, and 12, Beyonce made statements in front of in support of marriage equality. Jay-Z did. So as we go back to the topic of media, this needs to have a human face on the issue, and that's what we're trying to do with No More Two-Party System. We welcome our YouTube channel to be accessed by everyday Green, Libertarian, and other alternative parties and independents to share their voice and to make their own videos. And people have done that recently with our hashtag Open Debates campaign to try to get the presidential debates inclusive to Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. And then we're also taking pictures. If you go to our website, you'll see pictures of people holding up signs that say no more two-party system. So you know, I'm not afraid to take a good idea. What worked with the marriage equality issue, I think we need to copy that and put that human face on the issue. And, you know, I don't think we can count on the media, but we can count on everyday people making these videos and taking these photos. So I think it's going to take a trendy campaign and making it. I like to use the word normalizing the idea because it's really a foreign idea to a lot of people, just like marriage equality was a foreign idea to people. So it's really about normalizing the issue and putting a human face on the issue.
I'll go ahead.
I've dropped my glasses. Pardon me a second.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the media is beholden to us. I mean, they need our ratings. The dinosaur media needs our ratings. The alternative media needs our clicks for the. They still rely on ad revenue for the most part, or sponsors. And if we're not watching them, I mean, like I said earlier, I think we just need to stop paying attention to people that don't pay attention to us. I think the new silent majority. You know, I know I'm bringing up Nixon here again, but he had that term silent majority. They're the ones who came out and supported his campaigns. I think the new silent majority in 2016. Are the independents who are against the two-party system. And you're right, we need more celebrities to come out against it, to be bold. I mean, you haven't seen a lot of leadership or courage, I think, in presidential elections or any elections for that matter. I mean, it's always impressive to me when I see, like, a high-profile person say, I'm just going to do what no one else is doing. I'm going to vote for, like, you know... Oh, what's her name? Sabrina the Teenage Witch came out. She says, I'm going to work as part of Gary Johnson's campaign. I forgot her real name. I'm sorry. Melissa Joan Hart.
We definitely need more celebrity visibility. And it's unfortunate because back when Ralph Nader ran in 2000, he had a couple of celebrities on his side who were going to they had concerts for him, I think, at Madison Square Garden.
Michael Moore.
But I could be getting the venue wrong. Yeah. I think it was Madison
Square
Garden.
You're right. Michael Moore and Bill Maher.
They had Michael Moore, Susan Sarandon. What's her husband's name? Tim something. What's her husband's name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Shawshank Redemption guy.
Right. I'm forgetting his name. You had Rage Against the Machine. You know, all these different Patti Smith, I think, Annie DeFranco. So you had celebrities back in 2000 who were on board with Ralph Nader, and then unfortunately they bought into that two-party system spoiler effect narrative, and now you've seen Michael Moore decry Ralph Nader and Jill Stein for the past election cycles as he bitches and moans about how Republican like Obama is. I mean, it literally makes no sense. So, but I want to ask you something, Matt. You and part of me, I'm so sorry, I got in late, so can what's the name of our friend who's joining us with the flag in the background?
It's Robert from Reading Through History. It's his YouTube channel, Reading Through History. Yeah, subscribe.
All right. So, Matt, you're a teacher, right?
Yeah, we both are. Yeah.
Okay, so you guys are teachers. What grades do y'all teach?
6 through 12, pretty much all the social studies.
All right. And how about you, Matt?
I'm mostly juniors. And so, yeah, forgot to tell you, because we're teachers, make sure you don't say anything naughty now, okay?
All right. I think I said something naughty a moment ago.
Don't be like Trump.
That's a level two curse word. That's not that bad.
I do try not to because I do want this information to be accessible to young people, too. So.
Well, that's the points I'm wanting to get to eventually here.
But I do want to say that you're both teachers. And so you know that you're exposed every day to the mentality of conformity, right? Of all these young people who want to go along to get along and try to kiss up to the popular people and perhaps compromise, be their authentic self so they could fit in with the cool kids or this clique or that clique. And I don't think that goes away too much in adulthood. I mean, I think some of that obviously does go into adulthood, and a lot of that is in the psychological warfare voting out of the two-party system, where you keep having people tell us, I don't want to vote for the loser, they can't win. And I say, well, if you just want to vote for a winner, You're already voting for a loser when you vote for a Democrat and Republican, because they have given us, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but they have given us lie-based war, poverty, pollution, eradication of civil liberties, and $18 trillion in debt. So you're not voting for a winner just because you vote for somebody who technically wins the election. And that's just like trying to suck up to the cool kids and become popular in high school. So you may conform, you may fit in, but ultimately at the end of the day, you're not being your authentic self and you're doing nothing to progress the kind of progress we need. And if everybody who felt like lesser of evil, you know, isn't what they really want and voted for the alternative party options, they would start winning. So it's a huge psychological warfare issue. It's a huge conformity issue.
Agreed. Go ahead with your point, Robert, before you forget.
Oh, well, I've got like several here.
He's writing a book right now.
Got my old notes here from past talks we never got to. But what he was saying about the conformity, I mean, you could even go about that in other directions in schools. It's the tatwada. That's the way we've always done it. Or stuff that's rules inside the school, and you don't know why they're rules, but it's just, it's always been this way, so we never change it. Why do we do this? This is what the third party system literally is. And he mentioned the gay marriage thing, the same-sex marriage thing, and how quickly that happened, how quickly it went from there was like three states to all of them. And it just turned on a dime. I think this whole third party thing could happen that fast. And if it was someone like a Donald Trump who just didn't go Republican, you know, he went Trojan horse inside the Republican Party. If he would have, he or someone like him would have done that with like a reform party. Because, I mean, we talked about him getting like 16, 17 million votes, Ross Perot. It's just crazy. Or 19 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm hoping.
Well, Ross Perot.
Go ahead.
Well, Ross Perot was a self-financed billionaire, and so he's able to finance his campaign in a way that Jill Stein and Gary Johnson simply can't.
Yeah, it takes somebody
But I hear you. You know, I agree with you. We need more celebrity power. We need more name recognition. But at the same time, Roseanne Barr was an example of that. And as I said earlier, she got treated illegitimately.
Just they didn't respect her as a candidate or take her serious.
Here's correct.
Here's the difference.
But again, they didn't treat Arnold and Trump that way. What's the difference?
Well, the difference here with – you brought up Ross Perot. Ross Perot went on Larry King Live – and he's just like, I'm thinking about running for president. And he wasn't, he was still kind of just dipping his toe in there. What happened after that was a grassroots movement that had nothing to do with him to get his name on the ballot in all 50 states for the first time for a third party candidate in probably hundreds, like over 100 years. And so that had nothing to do with, so like, just like with Trump or with Schwarzenegger, I mean, you need to have the people passionately behind you. The problem with the third party candidates this year is they're just kind of like, you know, like they have the luxury of being not Trump or Hillary. But if it was anybody even slightly better as that third party, I'm sure so many people are kicking themselves right now. Like, why can't that be me and the Libertarian Party or Green Party? Because this would have been my chance. We have two despised candidates. Ah, you know.
Yeah, it's a golden opportunity. But I think with the younger people, he mentioned how they get it. I'm hoping you have a big presence on college campuses, and I'm hoping, you know, because I think you have to start with the younger people because they see it. They understand. They've heard their parents do nothing but complaining about the list you've ran off there for years of, you know, lie-based wars, $20 trillion debt, and so on. No one's really happy with it. So there is that opportunity.
Yes, and I want to let y'all know, No More Two-Party System is a relatively new group, only out for a few months. So we, you know, we're not a big presence right now. It's building steps, and it's like snowball. We got to get the momentum going. We have gone to a couple college outreach days here in the Los Angeles area where I physically presently am, and I recently got to go to a couple other states. So I went to St. Louis College and one in Texas, and only had a had some spare time. And I'm that much of a political nerd that on my spare time, I was doing a job, and on my spare time, I went and did this outreach. Mm-hmm. So it's slowly but surely, and this is a real organic grassroots group, so it's not financed by any corporations or rich people. Are you all familiar with the independent running name Evan McMullen?
Yes.
All right. Yes. He spurned up as the candidate from a group called Our America Initiative. And as soon as I saw Our America Initiative, I was very suspicious because it looked so slick and polished and everything, and it just came out of nowhere. And I was looking at that, and I go, this is not a real third-party movement. This is backed by somebody with deep pockets. And sure enough, it turned out to be the Republicans who didn't like Trump were the people who were behind Our America Initiative, people like Mitt Romney and others. And so they helped get this Evan McMullen guy, you know, and when he first came out, he had all kinds of media coverage the first couple days after announcing his campaign. It seems to have kind of fizzled out, but he just recently announced a vice presidential pick. So it will be interesting to see if all these people leaving Donald Trump over the sex comment video will go to either Gary Johnson or Evan McMullen, or if they're going to run back to Trump, or if they're just going to keep quiet and let the election pass. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think everyone's so deeply entrenched. That they're not going anywhere. It was a golden opportunity, but I mean, the stakes are so high in this election, and it's so divisive, and people are so dug in.
But I got to say, I think it will take the right people, too. It is really surprising that Jesse Ventura did not run. So many people wanted him to run. I think if you had a presidential ticket with a combination of somebody like Jesse Ventura and Cornell West running together, I think they'd be pretty unbeatable. But unfortunately, neither of them want to run for president. So the people who step up are Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. And,
yeah, that Libertarian Party, someone like that.
But I
could have made some waves.
I got to say, though, they did have one famous person run with them this year, which was John McAfee. And this is what I was saying a moment ago. You don't want the wrong person to run either, because I think John McAfee is the wrong person to run. He is tied to a controversy where his neighbor was murdered, and I think it was in a country, Belize, or I'm getting my geography wrong. Is Belize a country or a city?
Yeah, it's Belize. Yeah.
English-speaking country in Central America. I'm intrigued by it, but apparently it's dangerous if you live by Mr. McAfee.
So he's accused of murdering a neighbor, and then he picks a vice presidential candidate who was accused of sexual assault. So you don't want people like that becoming your nominees, because everything will be overshadowed by that. So that goes back to that unfair...
Well, hold up. What about the Republicans and Democrats, right? We got sexual assault on the Republican side. We got murders associated on the Democratic side.
So like I said, I think those stories would come out even if they're not true. I mean,
that's why I say they are held to a higher standard, unfortunately. So they really have to be on their A game, and they really have to be as skeleton-free as possible.
They have to fight through everything and that.
But on the other hand, Jesse Ventura, I think he's already well known enough that people either like him or don't like him. So, you know, he may be a little more controversial because of his conspiracy theory crowd, you know, type stuff. But people know him and like him enough that, you know, again, it's like the lottery. It's the right person at the right time. And unfortunately, we just didn't have people. But I do give Jill Stein and Gary Johnson credit, because they are putting the
They are fighting.
And I see both of them increasingly become a little more combative in their interviews. I think they're both getting sick of half of their interviews every time they're interviewed are, tell us about who you're more afraid of, Trump and Clinton. Are you going to feel sad the next day when whoever wins? Are you going to worry about whether you cost this one the election?
That's every one of your questions.
Now, I bet you if Trump or Clinton were to do a mainstream media interview, they'd have probably a list of, like, this is off topic, you're only going to have this much time, don't ask about this. But if
questions in advance.
But if Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, excuse me, when they get on there, again, how valuable is that media exposure when it just plays into the two-party system narrative fear-mongering of those bad words? Spoiler, costing the election.
Yeah.
But I think it does benefit, though, when the people who can recognize authentic people are going to look at Gary Johnson and Jill Stein and they'll say, look, maybe you're getting a lesser of evil when you vote out of the two-party system, too. Maybe you're going to get an imperfect candidate out of the two-party system as well. But you're going to get an imperfect candidate who, if you're ranked choice voting or evaluating lesser of evil, is still going to be light years ahead and better than Trump Clump. Can we call them Clump? I heard somebody use the word Clump the other day to describe Clump Trump and Clinton. So,
well, the other argument is like, they say that the Libertarian Party might end up taking the place of the Republican Party, and we're still going to have a two-party system, just new parties. That always happens. Like, the Republican Party took the place of the Whigs and the Know-Nothing Party.
And
Free Soil, kind of all together. Yeah, and so, I mean, is that my response again earlier is, I mean, I think there is going to have to be major reforms to the Constitution. I mean, even a new convention. I mean, because you can't, I think ranking or alternative voting is going to have to be the answer to get people out of the binary mentality of lesser of the two evils, because that's always going to be around. I mean, because people are just weak and they're emotionally driven. I'm sorry, myself included. I'm not going to say that I'm above anybody else here, but we all, this, our rational part of the brain here is not always on when it comes to important decisions. Go ahead, Robert.
Not really sure who would want whatever, you know, if Trump wins and it smashes the Republican Party, I don't think the Libertarians want the establishment Republicans. And if he loses and the purge goes the other way, I'm not sure the Libertarians would want the deplorables, the basket of deplorables, so to speak. They wouldn't fit with the Libertarian Party's open borders and such.
But the part, you know what, very well, Robert, that the parties evolve. I mean, the Republican Party, even from 20 years ago,
those two are not going
to
be compatible, though.
I think
I'm just saying
people change their minds, though.
And the never Trumpers, they're not going to coexist. Something's got to give.
I think people die, though. And like the older people, they die off. The younger people take their place. I mean, these parties,
I'm talking
like, imagine,
about, I mean, realize George Soros is out there and he's like 500 years old, but
well, if you know, one thing though that we have that we didn't have back when Ross Perot, even really when Ralph Nader ran, when the Bull Moose Party was trying to become a party, you didn't have the internet. So I think if we have one party breakthrough, it will probably be a domino effect benefiting the other parties too. But we'll see. I mean, let's not forget we have other minor parties who are not even getting any attention,
the Constitution,
like the Reform
Party, which sounds
party,
nice.
Socialist,
the
all these.
Constitution Party, which
and you have
nice.
To, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. But back to, I think, what one of you said earlier, and it sounds like I missed some of the conversation. You were talking, Robert, about some election laws that make it tough in your state. I'm in California. And matter of fact, I'm going to open my ballot as I talk to you. And,
okay, I was going to say we aren't violating any voter laws,
are we? This is just a voter guide, not the ballot.
Okay,
but anyway,
I was going to say we aren't violating any voter laws, are we?
No, this is a
Florida's
never mind.
Got
I thought
a
I had the sample ballot thing, but it's just the voter guide. But anyway,
Florida's got a bunch.
In California here, we have an election law called Top 2 General Election, and this was passed on a ballot measure back in 2010. This is going to be really boring political stuff, but bear with me. So Arnold Schwarzenegger and one of his Republicans in the legislature at that time got this thing on the ballot during the primary of 2010. Nobody paid attention to it. It was boring, put you to sleep political stuff during one of the primaries, which had one of the lowest turnouts. And thereafter, California kept setting new records of low turnout until this election with Sanders. But so it changed our election system where we have open primaries in our primary election, which is June, and we have a top two general election. Now, I don't take issue with the open primary. I'm kind of indifferent about that. Alternative parties have different opinions about it. So I'm not even going to worry about the open primary part, but I am very worried about the top two part, which basically has killed off the alternative political parties. It has killed off the Democrats, the Green and Libertarian parties, from having a chance at becoming viable because, number one, they don't have enough time to organize a big campaign just in the primary election cycle, number one. Number two, most voters are not even paying attention to primary elections unless some sort of big thing like pot or gay marriage or something is on the ballot. And those big things usually are not on primary ballots. They're usually on general election ballots. So you have a top two, which in California has resulted in numerous single party top two races, meaning two Democrats, because it's a heavily Democratic state. And our Senate race are you familiar with this? Our Senate race here in California only has
not
two
surprised,
Democrat
though.
Top two options. Did you know this?
Like California.
No, not surprised though.
So that means
sounds like California.
but here's the thing. Here's what's karma about this. This is beautiful karma to me because the Republicans put this scheme on the ballot, and now the boomerang effect is coming back to hit them in the butt because now they don't have a candidate. But this scheme went, the next time they tried to pass it was in Arizona and then Oregon, and thankfully it failed in Arizona and Oregon. Voters were paying attention. I made some videos warning them, be careful. And then now it's on the ballot as Amendment V in South Dakota. So I'm already fighting people online, warning them, do not vote for this. And I'll be making make a video about it here, hopefully before the last week of the election. But I want to be clear. Open primaries are very popular, especially with Sanders supporters who wanted the freedom to vote for whoever they wanted to across party lines. So I'm not opposing open primaries. I want to be clear about that. But when you attach top two to that, why? Why make it top two? Why not top five? Yeah. Or why not the top vote earner from each party so that you still have a multiple choice election in November as well as having a multiple choice election in June? So guess what happens when you have a top two primary? I can send you the links to confirm this. There's a website called Ballotpedia. And when you look at the races and the winners, it's always incumbent. And majority of the time, the winner is the incumbent. So this was sold to the voters as, oh, it's going to be good for more choice and it's going to end partisan gridlock, blah, blah, blah. No, it didn't. All it did was solidify two-party system dominance and incumbents winning. So if you ever hear open primary in your state, just be careful. If they attach top two to it, I would highly advise rejecting it.
Have you ever heard of top two, Matt?
No, not in Kansas.
I'll tell you one other interesting thing.
Basically,
is,
to clear this up, it means like out of all the primaries, whoever the top two vote getters were, irregardless of which party, they're the ones that go onto the ballot.
Yeah. Correct. So that could be two Democrats or two Republicans. Or most typically, one Democrat and one Republican, which then
doesn't, because a state like California, I mean, who could not have seen that coming?
So again, to the proponents of this, I ask, why are you so insistent on reducing voter choice in the general election? Why don't you say open primary and top five or top vote earner from each party, so that you still have the option of a green?
What a normal election is, you win the primaries and you go on.
Right. So I would say change the primary if you want, but leave the general election part of it alone, because otherwise all you're doing is you're really stealing voters' choice. I mean, if I vote out of the two-party system and I've only got Democrats on my ballot that I don't want to vote for because I don't want to vote for the two-party system, or if I'm a Republican, I don't like Republicans, but I still support their right to vote. Or if I'm with the Libertarian Party, there's no representation on your statewide ballot. So with this 2016 election here in California and the other states where this exists is Washington State. Louisiana has some sort of version of it that I'm not as familiar with, but Washington State and California has it. And so when you look at our ballots, if you're voting out of the two-party system and you're motivated, hey, I discovered Jill Stein or I discovered Gary Johnson, and now I want to vote for the Libertarian Party and help build it up, you can't do that in California. Now, I want to be clear. This only applies to the only the statewide elections, not the presidential election. So you can still vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, but you'll have no other Libertarians or Greens to vote for down ticket.
No, they just, I really just think they should get rid of political parties on the ballots. The R, the D, the L, like get it. Just put the names down. It would force people to actually do a little research and not just pick teams.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we already see that with judges and stuff, and people are like, "Who the heck is that?" I don't know.
Now, I do want to want to caution you about that though, because one thing they're doing with the differently with the South Dakota effort to put to pass this Prop 2, Top 2 ballot initiative, which is called Amendment V in South Dakota, they're doing exactly what you're saying. They are going to also make it a nonpartisan race, and not only a nonpartisan race, they want their whole legislature to be nonpartisan. I think Nebraska is the state they're citing as an example of this. But where I would take issue with that is, while things are the way they are, they may be nonpartisan in name, but they are still going to be a Democrat and Republican. The parties are still going to be able to endorse
they
want.
Conservative, liberal, whatever you want to call it.
But people still have to educate themselves, at least somewhat.
People just aren't
just
willing
at
to do that.
That's
the sad part, is they are not willing to do that.
Well, with Citizens United, though, the outcome is more than likely going to be the top two still being a pro-establishment Democrat and Republican. So I would say until you get rid of Citizens United, making a nonpartisan legislature or nonpartisan elections is not really going to change anything. They're just, if anything, I think it might make it worse, because now you're just hiding who they are and what parties they're affiliated with. And the most rich people are still going to prevail, I think.
Yeah, yeah, good point. We're at 2 hours though,
yeah.
So we have to
that
wrap this
second
up.
Second hour went fast.
Yeah. We'll just go over. I want to make sure that everybody visits your websites if they're interested. So, before we sign off here, Jeff, if you want to tell everybody how to best get involved with what you're doing.
Thank you, Robert, and thank you, Matt, for having me on the show. And the website is nomoretwopartysystem.com, and that's the number two, not the word two. So nomoretwopartysystem.com, and if people go to that, there'll be links to our Facebook page, Twitter page, YouTube page, and there's a nice email list that you can sign up. And I try to limit emails to no more than 4 a month, because people don't like getting bombarded with emails.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Keep it.
All right. Well, excellent. Thanks for coming on.
It's very interesting. It's a message that definitely needs to be out there.
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you check out No More Two Party System. See, that's why I can only do 2 hours, is because I forget how
throw
to talk.
Throw numbers and letters together, Matt gets confused.
I hate math. So, Robert, you want to promote something that you're working on here?
It's just reading through history. Check us out on YouTube. We got a whole lot of political. We did Green Party, Libertarian Party, how the entire election system works, the major candidates. Matt wanted a Jill Stein and Gary Johnson video, but it's too. We do have a Green Party, and we do have a Libertarian Party video where they get mentioned and explained. So check that out, because it's definitely election season.
Yeah, I encourage everybody to go to isidewith.com to see where they stand. And,
yes.
I have my students.
Keep hitting select more. It'll take you 2 hours to do it if you do it properly. Or you can do the shorter version. I probably just scared everyone away.
You can do the shorter version. It'll only take a few minutes. But yeah, to find out where you really stand on issues, so you're better informed on who to vote for.
They've got the Constitution
the most important
Party on there.
Yeah. And the most important thing I want to say, and you guys will agree with me here, is we're less than a month away from the election day. And the most important thing I want to tell everybody is that it's not just the election for president. I mean, the most important elections, in my opinion, are at the state level, especially at the congressional level. So everybody is going to be voting for a representative to represent their voice.
Supreme Court justices coming up, appointments. This is huge.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a Senate race in my state. Not only that, but look at who's running for city council even. These are the elections.
To get back to Jeff's point, we got it narrowed down to where basically there's two groups that get to have their say. Everyone else is shut out, and these are the stakes. Think about that.
So, yeah, we can vote for third parties at the local level first, and there are third parties all over the ballots. Ballotpedia is a great site that you said, Jeff, that I think everybody should check out as well. But, yeah, we're going to sign off now, and
yes.
Again, I'm you can check out my channel, Mr. Beat Social Studies channel. I'm finishing those presidential election videos, and I'm currently working on the awesome election of 1992, and I will finish those. I plan to release the election of 2012 on the day before Election Day, so that will be November 7th. So I'm going to meet my goal of finishing before the Election
Day. Awesome. That's an amazing feat, Matt.
Wow, thank you. I just don't sleep. Don't sleep.
I didn't think
so.
So,
yeah, until next time, this has been Context, and thanks for watching, and thanks for listening to the podcast. See you later.
You were ahead of your time. 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 Louisiana, which doubled the size of the state. It was a really good deal, but maybe not constitutional. He sent Lewis and Clark to explore the vast territory. He never vetoed.